Griffin, you replaced the sun, I hear.
I have an alarm clock that simulates the sun. It's a simulated sun that lives on my nightstand, and it wakes me up when my body feels ready for it. You have this alarm clock that's like, hey, Russ, hey, come on. And that's not how human beings are supposed to wake up. That's not how God intended it when he made the sun for us.
That was a really good impression of my daughter. I'm actually extremely impressed.
I have a little Virtua sun, and it pops up right on my bedstand. It doesn't burn me terribly as the real sun does. So that's another mark against real sun. And it wakes me up when I'm damn well ready to start my day.
How does it know when you're ready, though?
It just knows, man.
It knows you.
It knows me. It knows me inside, out, spiritually, physically.
Did it interview you, like, when you turned it on for the first time? Was it like, what's your favorite food?
There was a survey. Yes, it did do a survey. It was delivered by a man in a white suit. Sorry, I should have mentioned that first.
Yeah.
The man in the white suit, he wanted to know everything about me. And so he sat me in a special chair. We shouldn't be talking about this part on the air, though, because he told me not to tell anyone.
And he lives in your house now.
He does live with me. Yeah, he's more of a roommate. And when I set alarm clock, it's just him. At 6:21 a.m. every morning, he rustles me gently from my bed. His name is Philip. His name is Philip, and I love him very much.
Oh, he is Philly. Your son.
Do you have to feed him or take him for walkies?
Oh, shit. I gotta go!
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Christopher Plant, and I know a game this week.
My name is Russ Rushing, and I know the best game of the week.
Welcome back to the Besties, a weekly game of the year podcast, a book club for video games, as we like to say here.
There's got to be a better way to say it.
We like saying that. I don't think we like saying that. I think
love
we're just
the way it trips out of my tongue. This is a show where we talk about the latest and greatest in video gaming. And this week we're going to talk about Journey to the Savage Planet.
Is it possible that I wrote the title down wrong on the rundown when I was writing the rundown?
I have seen you type both.
You did, and then I corrected it. It is not Journey to a Savage Planet. It's Journey to the
Journey with my Savage Planet. Journey unto my Savage Garden. Who's gonna I don't think we nominated a leader to speak about this game.
Justin seemed kind of smitten by it. Maybe Justin should lead the charge.
I did. You know what? I did like it.
You set it up for, because I feel like this one is more than a lot of games we've covered this year, like came in pretty under the radar if you weren't like really paying attention.
Yeah. So, okay. Journey to the Savage Planet was developed by Typhoon Studios, which I'm currently looking at their website to see where they are based.
They're out of Montreal, Canada.
Right.
And they are now owned by Google Stadia as of December 29th. Correct.
Wow. Okay, cool. That's great. This would have been a good Stadia exclusive. It's a shame they couldn't pin that down.
Is it a shame?
It's a shame. Is it a Everybody shame with Stadia that could have enjoyed this great game. Okay, so Journey to the Savage Planet is a open world game where you're a spaceman who's stranded on the titular planet and must brave its dangers to rebuild your craft, refuel it, find out the sort of mystery at the center of this planet, unearth the reason that it seems to have been visited by intelligent life at some point, and to get home. You are being overseen by that sort of post-capitalist satirical corporation that seems to be in some permutation of which seems to be in every game. Your Aperture Sciences, that sort of deal. And the main thrust of the gameplay is split between, there's a lot of, I would say a lot of Metroid Prime DNA in there.
Yeah.
There's a lot of scanning your environment to learn about how it ticks.
And a lot of first person platforming, which is like, for me, the like the thing I think about when I think about Metroid Prime, because it's what, that's not a knock against it. It's maybe the only game that's ever done a good job with it, except for Jumping Flash on the PlayStation 1.
Yes, and I think if you return to Jumping Flash now, you would find yourself disabused with the notion that you handled it well. That was at a time in video games where jumping very high was enough to just like, I don't know, guys, put it on the disc. Game's done. We got Phil Hartman. We're calling it Blasto. Put it on a disc, baby. It's ready to go. So there, yeah, there's a lot of, you do have a one weapon. You have a blaster that you upgrade with, like, you know, better battery and more damage, etc. And you get some sub weapons, some items that you collect in the world, grenades that do like shocking and acid and explosions and stuff that or you bait. Use to explore different puzzles and what have you. There is a lot of platforming. There's a lot of exploring the world. You have a jetpack that you can upgrade with more sort of boosts. It's never like a free floating kind of thing. It's like a jump extender. And you also can get a grappling beam of sorts that lets you connect to certain points scattered around the world. You can't just use it to connect anywhere.
It is like uncannily similar to Metroid Prime. It really, like, just ever and not the research question
stuff. It's much more fluid than Metroid Prime. Yeah, it's much more fluid than Metroid Prime. I think if you return to Metroid Prime, you would find yourself disabused of the notion.
They put Luigi in a mansion, put it on the disc.
That is the idea of the game. It's not massive. You know, I did probably 70% of all the stuff. I did all the collectible stuff that sort of interested me. Some of it has a little bit of narrative component. Some of it's just like getting this orange goo to smash into your helmet and upgrade your life and your stamina. And before I say anything else, you should know there's a little bit of FMV in there.
Your boss, there it is.
That will color my take on the game. You have a boss that you know, sends you video messages about your progress, all very kind of silly and absurd. And then there are some commercials that I would say they remind me of, you know, they remind me of the most, the like Jackbox fake products, you know, it's still that sort of same satirical tone.
By way of Tim and Eric, like
that, yeah, that, like Idiocracy, yeah. I got that vibe from it.
Yeah, and I don't. Okay, so the gameplay is all, none of it feels particularly new. None of it feels particularly like, it's challenging. It's not that hard. But for whatever reason, I found this sort of like very mild curve of exploring the world and finding the little collectibles around. Like, I just found it very pleasant. It's the kind of game that really entices you to explore, I think. It's always kind of like luring you away. It looks really cool. The geography is all really cool, and it feels really crafted, especially when you're going after some of the more hidden collectibles. Like, there are a lot of there are paths that are hidden out of the way that make you feel really smart and accomplished for finding them and kind of zipping around with your jetpack and your grappling hook.
I do want to talk about like moving around, because you talked about, you said that it's not, you think this feels better than Metroid Prime, which I...
Let me correct that. Okay. Once you finish upgrading your jetpack and get like all the charges in it...
Sure, so at the end of the game, yeah.
Well, no. I had it halfway through.
Okay. Once you get the first like jetpack double jump upgrade, essentially, like that's when it kind of clicked. I was not enjoying the game at all until I got that. And I was like, oh, okay, like this actually opens a lot of doors. And actually, it feels pretty good. I think the locomotion's like the best thing this game's got going for it. It is fun.
I don't disagree with that, but I don't know if that...
Yeah, I don't know. I once I had the jetpack upgrade, I felt like I was like constantly over jumping things and like didn't have a good feel for it. I also, one of the weird things about it is that the controls are like, for at least for me, kind of cumbersome and clunky. Like there was a lot.
I tried both.
So I started with the controller, and I found myself having to like maneuver like way too many, like shifting my thumbs around way more than I normally would when I'm like, oh, I need to scan this thing and I need to pull up my tracker and then I need to blah blah blah. It was just like way more complicated than it should have been. And then I moved to PC and it was equally complicated because there's just so many inputs. It's like, okay, I'm switching sub weapons and now I'm throwing a sub weapon and now I'm grappling, and like there was just like a lot of variables for a game that is really not that complicated, but I feel like for whatever reason they made it that complicated.
I don't know.
It felt a lot more sensible on controller, I think. I will say it's a little cumbersome switching between your sub weapons. You have to like tap on the D-pad to flip through them, and there's not like a quick select to one of those. And a lot of them, you're in situations where you need a certain thing right now, and that can be a little bit annoying. I tended to overshoot those.
We haven't really talked about the other sort of like vector in this game's DNA, which is probably my least favorite thing about it, is that it kind of dabbles in the craft genre. Like a when I started playing it, I thought, oh, this is going to be a Subnautica. This is going to be
I think you actually just announced it as such at the end of our last episode and said it is a Subnautica. It's one of those.
It's not really one of those. It is not. But like, okay, I guess the more obvious like comparison is like a No Man's Sky. You turn, you land on this planet. It's vivid and bright and colorful and strange. And you think, okay, well, I'm going to go get all this stuff to upgrade my blaster pistol and then upgrade my scanner so I can find more minerals to upgrade my jetpack, to upgrade my ship, to upgrade, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to like improve your chances of survival and improve like your way of getting around the world. But like, it's really, it leans a lot. It is much more, scripted isn't the right word, because it is still open world, and you can sort of, you know, go and explore and find all kinds of different things. But like, It does not follow that pattern necessarily. Like,
the system is not pleasurable at all. So the way that you actually get perks is there are all these perks that you, like just Griffin's describing, that you collect all these different types of materials and then you can unlock the perk. That would be fine, perfectly fine. Or like maybe you get level upgrades that can allow you to unlock those. Instead, what they do is you have a journal in your menu, and in the journal, you have science experiments that you need to do. And those experiments are unreliable at best. I spent an hour trying to do an experiment where you just shock 5 creatures and kill them within a certain amount of time, or however many creatures. And I did it multiple times in multiple places, and it never unlocked. And then literally after doing this for, I'm not exaggerating, an hour, I went into a new area where it just happened by accident. It was like, oh, great. What a tremendous waste of my time. You also have to collect DNA from certain creatures, but you can only do that when you are on that specific layer of the mission. So you go. I went around the whole game wondering why I couldn't collect DNA samples from anything until I realized, oh, I have to collect just the 3 it wants me to do now. And then later on in the game, I have to go back to collect things I've already passed. It's like routinely frustrating how they designed the system.
And the bigger thing for me is like there's the craft element that they have in there feels so unnecessary, right? So like, to talk about the economy of the game, which is like a thing that I find very fascinating in games like this. One of the first missions is like, you need the double jump. If you want to go any further, if you want to find the thing with the grapple beam, you're going to need the double jump, right? It is very Metroid-y in that way. It says, okay, well, here's a place where we know there is this alien alloy that you need to make the jetpack upgrade for double jump. You can go there. To the game's credit, you could also just go anywhere that this alien alloy exists, because it is like a very rare crafting material that you need for like special upgrades. So you could accidentally find it somewhere else, and that's super cool. I went the intended route. I found the alien alloy after going through this cave full of like monsters and lava. I got the alien alloy, and it was like, great. You also need 100 carbon, and it's like, you're going around. I went back to the ship with my alien alloy, like, let's do this thing. It was like, oh, you only have 50 carbon. You don't have 100 carbon. I was like, well, I guess I'll go back outside and like shoot 5 space chickens and then come back inside and do it.
Did any of you come across the green gelatin cube version of alien alloy? Did you understand what to do with it?
Oh, yeah.
What did you do to open it?
I kicked it off a cliff.
Uh-huh.
And then I noticed that there was some silicon down there, and I noticed it went around and sucked it up. So I just kept feeding it, and I gave it I slapped some of those berries that heal you, and it ate those, and then eventually ate so much that it exploded.
Whoa. That's great. I'm glad that you explained it, because it's the one time that you, I think there are 2 or 3 of these in the game. totally unexplained and not related to any of the other allies, which just open normally.
Justin, do you think that's because of your like adventure game DNA, where you like throw a paperclip at a door and hope for the best?
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. That's absolutely that, and the fucking page on IGN that I looked at. Told me
but like, that's what I'm saying. It is. That sounds neat. Actually, I'm into that. What I'm not into is like this additional unnecessary layer of, well, actually, you have to go and get this material that like is hanging on some walls, and if you break those, you get 50, and if you kill a chicken, you get 5, and then you go back and you can make the thing by going back to your ship, which like you do eventually get access to a teleportation network, but like, just like when the chest opens, instead of getting an alien alloy and then I have to go and get 100 like pieces of carbon and then I go back to the ship to make the upgrade that you've told me to make, the chest opens and I get the thing and I can do the double jump.
Can you guys drill down on the like, okay, I felt some of these like complaints, especially gating it behind the science experiments. I thought was so like the science experiments feel like a one of those like extended end game, like, I don't know, if you want to do this, you can. But it is gating things like upgrading your weapon and stuff behind the, and upgrading your jetpack, like behind these.
It felt like MMO padding, grinds. Like a way to pad the gameplay longer than the game actually was, is what it felt like.
I agree with you about the science experience. I want to drill down on like what you're saying could be leveled at like a lot of like open world collection games. So Chris, can you like differentiate? What's the, what separates this from like, from the pack in terms of getting on your nerves?
I think, to talk about this game, the way I think about this game is, there's a thing that nice restaurants do, where they have like a whole bunch of, interesting food options, right? You can get like their special fish, or they have like, I don't know, an interesting way of
I'll
making,
have the special fish, please.
You know, they have the special fish, right? Or the ratatouille made by the rat.
I can tell you're a real gourmand.
But then like every fancy restaurant also just has a cheeseburger, even though it's like a fancy restaurant. They're like, I don't know, like surely there will be people who just want the cheeseburger. They don't want to try anything too risky. We'll make it, it's like a little bit better than you expected. And this is the cheeseburger of the video game industry right now, where it's like, we know this recipe. It that we, when they set out to make this game, it was like, we will, this is a game we know we can make and ship within this amount of time. It is the most proven formula imaginable. It's a little bit better than you would expect. It's nicer than a traditional like indie game, right? Like it looks kind of AAA-ish. But then like you eat it, and after you're done, you're like, I mean, I enjoyed it. I like cheeseburgers, but I'm never going to think about this again.
Yeah, there's something cynically dispassionate about it. It just doesn't have like a soul, which is the kind of the vibe.
The weird thing is I think it does. I just don't like the soul. But to be like, to specifically answer your question, I think the issue is because the game doesn't really aspire or doesn't feel to me to aspire to anything specifically great, the fact that it's just trying to do follow effectively the formula, that it's not even doing the formula very well, is maddening to me. Like, it's a 10-hour game, and, like, I have to do MMO grind, like, padding just to get through that is not particularly thrilling. I didn't hate this game. Like, this... I mean, we talk about, like, what are good exercise games? Holy cow, is this a good exercise game? Because time sure passes while you are just doing the grind. But I think its flaws are more obvious because I can't do the thing that I would do with... We talked about Kentucky Route Zero last week. Sure, there are definitely flaws there. But then I can also think about all of the things that I really adore about the game. And for this, there... When I try to think of things that were really special to me or going to stick with me, it doesn't hold as much weight.
I just wanted to share my like biggest pet peeve in the way that the humor gets in the way of like having a good time with this game. Very early on in the game, like one of the first things you do, you pick your quote character. You basically pick from like 8 different like images of characters. And they're like goofy images. Like one of them is like a screaming man, and one
they look
of them,
like 1980s shopping mall like photo booth laser right. Background mullet like that.
Yeah, aesthetic. That kind of thing. One of them is a dog, which I thought was funny. Like, hey, I want to be a dog, so I picked the dog. What I didn't know at the time was that selection actually determines the noises your characters make as they run through this world.
That's That's good. Fuck you, Russ. That's amazing.
Funny, Russ. You idiot. That's so funny.
It was funny.
You picked a dog, and then you're mad it made dog noises.
It was funny the first time I heard like a dog grunt after like a long fall. Like, that's pretty funny.
This is a good segue to talk about the comedy, because I feel like that's the shit that works in this game. And by this game, I mean any video game. This like idea of this joke only works because it is interactive. This joke works because it is endemic to like the design of the game itself. It is not just a joke that they are shouting at you, which this game does so
sure
much.
I would agree
of
with that. The problem is, and this is also common with games that try to do humor, the 60th time I have to hear a loud dog panting when I sprint for too long, I wanted to jump off a bridge. It was literally, I went back to the ship trying to change my character profile just so I didn't have to hear that goddamn audio clip again.
I played as the dog, and I will be honest, I didn't even notice that it was a dog. I just thought this guy was a freak.
That's like, so good. That both of those really are good. So funny to me.
That's very funny to us now. I feel weird about, as somebody who like does jokes, I feel like I hate criticizing other people's like comedy, but they've made it such a centerpiece of the tone. If you remove it, there really like isn't any tone to speak of. I mean, it is literally just one speed. At first, I'll be honest, like I found it pretty grating just because that note of like capitalism is bad, but like we're supposed to get you excited about it is like, I feel like super played out in video games a lot, because the metaphor of playing most games is like direct, like one-to-one direct with the metaphor of like being exploited by a capitalist system. Yeah. It's like right, like 100% easiest joke you can make. I will say by the end, I wasn't like laughing. It wasn't funny, but I did kind of find like, it's so eager to please, you know, like I just found it like pleasant enough.
The lead actor is like charming in a weird way. He's very watchable. This guy who's like your boss. I don't think the script is particularly pleasurable, but his performance is enjoyable. Kind of like the guys who do the Sonic commercials. I don't like the commercials, but I would hang out with those guys in that car.
Yeah,
they
seem like cool guys.
They're brilliant improv. You also have the other like character in the game is your AI sort of companion throughout the game. For me, that was the delivery mechanism. That was like literally anything. You scan any animal, you enter any new area, you pick up any new upgrade, you do anything, and she's got a disinterested AI, I don't give a shit if you live or die, like quip about it that like, here's what sucks about it. Sometimes the jokes land so much. Anytime you eat one of the orange goo upgrades, a lot of those jokes were fucking great. The first time I did, like, first 10 minutes of the game, you go out into this new area, and then on a little hill, you see this orange pod of goo, and she's like, I wonder what that is. I wonder if it could be helpful to your mission. And you've also just learned about the scanner, because you used it to scan some animal. And so I just ran right up to that hill, and it said interact when I hovered near it, and picked it up, and just fucking shoved it into the front of my face like a sea of thieves banana, and like my health and stamina increased. And she was like, wow, I just told you about the scanner and you didn't scan that, and we're on an alien planet and you just shoved that orange alien goo that you found on the ground in your mouth. And like, that cracked me up, because like, you probably didn't get that if you scanned it. And it's like, it that is funny to me. Like, that is an interactive joke that I felt like I was a part of. And there are a lot of really good ones of those, but they are drowned out by just constant jokes.
There's a lot of it that feels like a spreadsheet next to like a list of things that you scan. And it's like, okay, what's like, I guess we have to find something. I don't know. Maybe this is the joke about it. You know, it feels very mechanical.
I think the thing that bums me out about this, the game and the humor, isn't even the jokes themselves. It is the whole critique on capitalism and also colonialism. I mean, it's not a secret that the title Journey to the Savage Planet, not great. Use of the word savage, not particularly great. But I think I have to imagine, considering the game so clearly is trying to make a commentary on colonialism, that like that was intentional, that like there's like, I guess, some irony to this idea of Journey to the Savage Planet, where you are actually just this colonialist figure who is landing and killing. I mean, I don't know if we talked about this, many of the quote enemies don't actually want to fight you. You just kill them.
You need their carbon.
Yeah, and you're destroying their planet. I mean, it's very on the nose. But the problem is, it never really says anything. In a way, it reminds me of kind of Spec Ops: The Line, which I know a lot of people love, but where it does the thing of like, well, you've all had fun. I hope you feel bad. Like, we built this playground that sure does feed exactly the thing that we claim to be against.
But it doesn't, if you finish the game, like, it doesn't, which I guess we all did, it doesn't even, like, underpin those themes. Like, it doesn't thematically tie it all together, right?
The tiniest of spoilers here, and I don't think this could even really be a spoiler because it's really hard to spoil this, but again, if you don't want to hear it, skip ahead 15 or 30 seconds. There, when you have the final boss fight, the boss in alien language tells you effectively the message of the game, but it's in an alien language, so it's only understandable via subtitle, which is running across the bottom of the screen in tiny font while you're doing the boss fight. So yeah. Good luck enjoying that. It's the goose on this are so old. I mean, there's a commercial about malls. Like, cool. The 1970s was a really great time for us to think about malls and capitalism. What the hell? Like, I wasn't alive when that like was a trendy critique.
Chris, you don't understand. If you go to the malls, you're a stupid person.
I don't want to close this on this kind of down note because I think everything everybody's saying is absolutely valid. I think it's only frustrating because like it gets close to a lot of great stuff that it doesn't quite get to. But overall, I found it to be a very pleasant experience. I think it is a bargain priced title. Is that right?
Yeah, $30. I think I think this is the sort of game you'll also see sales on, and on sale it's like, hey, this is a good way to spend half a day or something. Like,
this would be the perfect game for a platform like Stadia, where if I didn't have to pay money for it and it was just a thing that I could like pick up and play for a weekend. I think folks at
Kotaku wrote about
that. It's a great like pass a weekend type of video game. But yeah, when you have to hold it up to the light compared to everything else that's out right now, woof.
As I'm preparing to transition out of this segment, I will say this. I do feel this game fading out of my mind like Brigadoon. The moment I press stop on this recording, I will go, bye-bye. And it's like, goodbye, Justin.
Yes, it'll journey away from us. Let's go to our break.
Kindred is the name of the company that they're working for in this game. It is cut from the mold, like I said, of many other fake video game corporations like Aperture Science. We wanted to talk about some of our favorite video game corporations because I feel like they don't get enough credit. They're so often cast as like the bad guy, like bad, ooh, scary corporations. But they got a lot to offer.
Sometimes corporations are good, and they're just basically like people, and they love us.
Thank you.
When you love them, they love you back.
So who wants to go first with their favorite corporation?
Look, corporations are people, and they're better than people because they don't make you collect fucking strawberries and melons when it's off season. And that's why I love Joja Mart, brought to you by Joja, the corporation that should be the hero of Stardew Valley, but isn't. Because those fucking Juminos walk around and think they're so hot, but actually, Joja Mart is where it's at. Reppin' Joja Mart.
I have played this game so many times and understand that there is the good ending where you invest your money and resources into the community center and rebuild the town of Stardew Valley and force Joja Mart out of business. And there is also the, like, Amazon HQ2 ending where you instead like invest everything in Joja Mart, and I've never had the stomach to do the latter.
Look, here's the deal. Think of how many people that Joja Mart employs. There's only like 12 people in Stardew Valley. They probably employ 10,000 people. You shut Joja Mart out of business? There's like mass depression and hysteria in the streets all over the globe. So which is more important? Your tiny little idyllic town or the world?
The gears of the lifeblood of this country. The gears of war. I mean, in a similar vein, I'm all about that Nook life. It's all I'm thinking about. We're about a month out and change from New Horizons. And it just got me thinking about Nook because I feel like this is the whole Nook Enterprise, and like my man's got his fingers
Let's be clear, we're talking about Animal Crossing for people that aren't aware.
Yeah, who wouldn't know that? My man's got his fingers in the mortgage business. He's got his fingers in just sort of like general contracting.
Sure.
And also retail, right? Because his kids, cousin, nephews? I don't know what the...
I think it's the nephews.
Okay, well, Timmy and Tommy, Jimmy, anyway, they run the shop, right? And so like my man has the whole thing locked down, and that's very good to me. But they don't... The prices are fair. The prices are good. His loans that he gives you are interest free.
That is a pretty good deal.
With no down, like no down payment, or maybe explicitly a down, only a down payment.
Yes.
It depends on which way you think about it. And like for me, that's a good business. You invest in it, it gets bigger, it offers you more choices, you grow with it. That's a good business. This is a good raccoon.
People do dump on Tom Nook on the regs, but he is actually pretty generous, all things considered.
Yeah, he's a generous, and he's investing in his community. What the fuck have you done? You built like one shitty house, and you planted like four apple trees, and then you left, and the town got covered in detritus.
He's basically the George Bailey of video games.
Yes!
Yeah. Basically. I'd like to talk about an extremely powerful and important corporation to video games. That's Altor.
Mm.
Altor has laid into end. Altor has the wildest arc of any company in any video game ever. You ready? Mm. Saints Row 1, Altor is a clothing manufacturer. Saints Row 2, Altor is 5 years later. Okay, 5 years after that, their business interests, looking at the wiki page here, their business interests include real estate development, power, cell phones, pharmaceuticals, packaged foods, casinos, and weapon manufacturing.
Wow.
That's Altor in 5 years. That's wild. That would be like if in the early 2000s, FUBU was like, we're sending a man to the moon. This is our whole fucking shit now. So Altor does that. Later, they get into more, even more industries. And then the head of the company, Dane Vogel, dies, and he sets up a branch of this company in hell. There's a branch of Altor that is actually in hell. Fast forward to 2050, this company takes over Mars and controls like both the financial part and the governance of Mars by 2050 in the Red Faction video game series.
Wait.
Altor is a huge part of that.
Is that
too.
True?
Yeah, bub.
I never
They're
put
in the
that
same universe.
I never put
Altor
that together.
Altor unites the Saints Row and
that's spectacular.
That's fucking fantastic. I never knew that.
Yeah. So that's the amazing Altor Corporation.
I mean, I can't follow it. The only thing I have is Rapture. I just love the idea of Rapture Inc. that Andrew Ryan one day is just talking with a gang of people at a party, and he's like, hey, I'm going to open the same city, but underwater. And he says it in such a convincing way that everybody's like, yeah, I guess so. I'll leave my family and friends behind.
Is that? But that's not really a corporation.
It is because it's a private city. It's an entirely privatized.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Ryan Industries.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was the name
That's
of
fair.
His was his company.
Yeah, I guess you would need right, because you have to be invited. You can't well, that guy does sneak in, but he's also his son, so I guess whatever.
Yeah. I mean it's like a Spoilers. I don't know. It's okay, yeah. Let's say yes, let's not spoil BioShock, a 13-year-old video game.
BioShock's good. I
right.
just want to also mention that.
Do we have any messages from our listeners about their thoughts on Journey to the Savage Planet?
Let's see. Chase wrote in to say the trend of play this game. I think it's good. Question mark. The trend of games where you follow stink lines continues. This is true. This is our second consecutive game in which stink lines are followed. Said the glad the world wasn't procedurally generated. It would have lacked a good sense of exploration. And the art style is great. So Chase is into it. We've also got a haiku from Chance. Great exploration. Every game needs grapple hooks. Fun to fight bosses.
Now that last bit is they needed to fit the fucking like syllable count for a haiku because the boss fights in this game are the pits.
Yeah, they're actually, I like them.
I also asked folks on Twitter who didn't play the game for their favorite funny moment from a video game. Cassandra said, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3. I played with a friend, and we hid in a building with only one door and one window. Enemies kept coming in, and we would panic, but they would always ignore both of us and run straight out the window. We were only 15 or so, but it was the funniest thing in the world.
Wow.
At PMC Trilogy says, Assassin's Creed 3, I was tailing some guy and tried to hop a fence, but got shot into the air instead. I failed the mission 3 times, once for leaving the tail distance, once for leaving the mission zone, and a third time for dying when I hit the ground.
That's both of those things are funny video game things and not like the great and mighty poo. Like, not like a big, just here's a joke for you. We got a joke for you. You like the joke?
I have to confess something.
Okay.
I bought Gex 64 from Toys R Us and played it for one day, realized how much of a mistake it was. I was probably 13. Went back the next day. They obviously had a policy about not accepting returns like that. I made up the most outrageous story about how it like melted my N64 through the floor just so I could get the $60 back and buy something decent. Man, was that game awful.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man.
Humor games. How good are they?
Anybody been playing anything else that is good?
I played a little bit of this game, Discolored. I think it's on Apple Arcade. It's a first-person adventure puzzle type thing, sort of like in the Myst vein. Very cool stylistically. You start off and it's like in a black and white world that's very contained. It's sort of centered on this like diner and a house that's sort of like connected to the diner and just sort of the immediately surrounding area. So it's small scale, which is good for a phone because I hate walking around in first person and on the phone. I find it kind of cumbersome, but not a problem here. And the puzzles are all centered on restoring color to the world. So you find like items that can bring color back into it. That in doing so, you gain the ability to like interact with other items and, you know, so on and so forth. You collect the thing, you use the thing on the thing.
How do I play this game, Justin?
It's, what do you mean?
Well, me physically with my broken eyes. How do I play this game?
Russ will have trouble with this game.
Let me see. You know what? I've got it right here. Let me see if there's a colorblind mode while somebody else
I started playing Halo Reach on PC. And you know what? Older first-person shooters are a strange thing to return to. And I don't know if that's because so many new shooters come out every year that the genre just evolves rapidly and it makes it hard to go back to them, so they don't seem to age as well, or what. The game is still fun.
Is it like the same engine as the Master Chief Collection?
Yeah, I believe so.
I mean, has it gotten like basically the same spit shine sort of
Yeah, it's
treatment?
In that collection.
Like, yeah. Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's, and on PC, I believe it's the only game that you can actually play right now in
yes.
single player.
Okay.
And yeah, it is enjoyable. It's like more of it feels like a novelty because it really it's so not like what I remember Halo. Halo Reach has one, you don't have the Master Chief thing.
Right.
Two, there's like a lot of driving in this, like, it's not open world, but like large open spaces. And you have these very strange power-ups that feel kind of like a tease for what hero powers would later become and stuff like Destiny. It really feels like a game between periods. And as a result, it's not especially good at being either of those generations. But if you are somebody who just likes seeing how video game history evolves, I thoroughly recommend checking it out, especially since it's a part of this collection, which will end up being just tons and tons of games. And the Halo multiplayer is still wonderful.
I loved Reach. I was crazy about
yeah.
it. But this
yeah.
is when I was like, I was reading like the Halo books, and so like the Reach lore, like I knew about, and I was excited to like live it. That was
yeah.
a, that
it was my favorite at the time. I think the problem is Destiny exists now, and while I'm playing yeah. it, I keep thinking I could be playing Destiny.
Sure. I've been, speaking of 1,000-year-old games, I was looking for something to play on Switch, so I got into Minecraft because I thought like, hey, I could open up, I haven't played it since it first came out, and like I could open up a server because they like offer a service to do that now. You don't have to like, you know, have a you know, a BlackBerry Pi fucking dongle on your computer to run an online server. And that game has changed a lot, and it's got a lot of really cool shit. The thing that I'm like kind of into now is like I take a lot of pleasure in like Lego sets, like building something with a
instruction book,
like an instruction book, right? Like I genuinely, not a joke, like putting IKEA furniture together. I find that to be very like zen-like and contemplative.
As long as the fucking screws work, am I right?
Yeah, sometimes that sucks. And so like what I've gotten into is like finding builds, like finding YouTube videos of builds that folks have done where they put together like an assembly list, like a list of here's, you need, you know, 116 cobblestone slab, you need like all of these different things, going out into the world, acquiring those materials, bringing them back, putting them in one big box, and just saying like, okay, like let's do this, and like building a huge windmill, like, and it takes a while, and I can do it while I'm, you know, editing a podcast or something like that, and like that is very much scratching the same itch for me. I know Lego like has things like that too. I feel like doesn't Lego Worlds essentially have like some
you
sort
also of describe Dragon Quest Builders?
Yeah, I mean,
much exactly.
Yeah, like Dragon Quest Builders has that sort of built into the game, right? Like Minecraft.
That's why it's better than Minecraft, is what I'm saying.
Sure, but what I'm enjoying Minecraft because, like, also there are now, like, hundreds of people on this server. And so, like, seeing other people doing that same thing, too, is, like, a genuinely, like, this is the first time that, like, I kind of, like, get why Minecraft is, or at least was, like, the biggest game on the planet. Yeah, it's a cool experience.
Okay, so I've been playing the same game every day for 4 years.
Wait, hold on, wait, Russ, before you do this, let me get your can opener, because looking at the rundown here, it sounds like you're about to open up a can of whoop ass. It says rant right here. Rant?
I was in the
I'm
middle
ready.
Of my rant, and you ruined
clear the decks, put the kids to bed. Russ is about to bring the fucking heat. Get him, dude.
I've been playing the same game for 4 years. That is Fire Emblem Heroes. It is a mobile game. I've talked about it on the show before. Represent, dropping the heat on Fire Emblem Heroes. Here's the thing. They just, this weekend, for after 4 years, introduced a $10 a month subscription fee to access. Now, look, I get it. If you want to charge a subscription fee for costumes or cosmetic stuff, whatever, that's fine. I get it. But they're like locking actual gameplay features behind this subscription wall, and it is totally like a major, major drag. It is literally the only Nintendo mobile game that is left that has like any sort of goodwill associated with it. All the other ones have sort of like devolved into like Animal Crossing, they kind of ruined Animal Crossing. Mario Kart, they kind of ruined Mario Kart. No one still plays Super Mario Run anymore. Fire Emblem Heroes was the only one that like had a community and had enthusiasm behind it. It was also the only one still making money for them. Well, that's not true. They all made money, but this was still making a lot of money for them, and they were not satisfied, so they went ahead and introduced this thing. Basically $120 a year to play this game. That is like more, that is like five times the amount they charge for Nintendo Online, which has all sorts of free games. You could buy all the DLC for Three Heroes. You could do so much, and this just feels like such a step in the wrong direction, and I was just super, super bummed about it.
I cannot, in my mind, like reconcile how they have a subscription model and a like gacha game model. Like, those two things seem, because the whole idea of a subscription model is you pay us this stuff so that like we can continue to support the game, develop out the game. That's like why MMOs have subscription models. But also, if you pay $5, you'll get some orbs that you can use to randomly get like new heroes on your team, and maybe they'll all be shitty. It's like, how do those two things coexist?
Yeah, I think it's just, I think what they're building it for are the people that spend $100 a month, like gladly, on the gacha model. And then they're like, oh yeah, whatever, $10 a month and I get
two free
characters.
They're killing their whales, right? Like, why are they,
whales. Yeah,
I don't.
And that
would have
been fine if, I don't know, they made such a big deal of it and they were just shoving it in everyone's face. And it just felt very gross for a game that I like passionately have enjoyed for this long. Yeah, so rant over, the end.
The can is closed.
Close the can. It's empty. There's no more whoop-ass inside. So next week, we're going to be talking about...
Dream? Maybe Dream? How's it looking, Plant? Our man on the ground.
Here's the thing. We want to talk about Dreams, the new Media Molecule game.
Not the game. Not the game. Just our Dreams.
It's going to be the most boring podcast of the year.
I'm rolling this big donut.
Open up the can.
It's going to be falling out.
Will we talk about Dreams? It depends on if we are able to play it before then. Here is a game we will be talking about no matter what. Super Mario Brothers 3. Y'all don't have an excuse not to participate in the video game book club this week because everybody has a copy of this game sitting
look under your
somewhere.
Chair right now. Check your pockets.
Why are we talking about Super Mario Brothers 3?
Because it is the, I believe, 30th anniversary of Mario Brothers 3. So we will use that as a chance to talk about that game, the legacy of that game, which, I mean, don't even get me started on that Power Glove. And everything else. Mario, I hope y'all enjoy it. I hope that we also get to talk about Dreams. My teeth keep falling out. I don't know what it means.
If we don't get access to Dreams, and I think like this may be the first time we've done a game that won't be out. It drops on the 14th, and we'll be recording our next episode on the 12th. So like, I guess instead of like your thoughts on Dreams, unless you have beta access, which like they were very open with, like if you have questions about the game, or anything, then let us know. And if not, like, we'll definitely talk about Dreams at some point, right?
I'd love to hear your Super Mario Brothers 3 memories, too. Yeah, just like,
sure.
I think everybody, a lot of people at
least. It's a you, Mario.
Let's just do this one. The Wizard. It was in The Wizard, and they had fun stuff in The Wizard. Mm-hmm. Okay. Hopefully that headed off the 3,000 emails about The Wizard we were going to get.
I will read your Wizard emails, dear listeners. And in exchange, I would ask that you help us spread the word about the show. You can share a link that is besties.fan, and then it'll set someone right to our Spotify page. Because we are produced in conjunction with Spotify, you can follow and listen for free there, which you are doing, have done, but you could tell others to do.
Some people maybe haven't clicked the follow button, and you should do that if you haven't done that yet.
Also, you can follow us on Twitter at The Besties Pod. That is a great place to learn about the topics of new episodes. And we have a newsletter, which you can subscribe to on our Twitter page.
So that's the end of The Besties. And be sure to join us again next week for The Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Is a Spotify original podcast in association with Vox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!